Tune into Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, good morning to all. You are tuned to Radio Psy Asia stream, and today is a holy Thursday, so a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. This is a segment, Morning Glory. Sister Karuna has told me to host this segment for today. I am Raghu from Team Radio Psy. I place my most humble pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listeners, today is 7th of March and the time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. IST. And the weather in the ashram is very pleasant, but it's quite warm. Just Shivaratri festival concluded. And right now, dear listeners, the Vedam and Bhajan sessions in Mandir concluded. I hope you have listened to the live Vedam and Bhajan sessions, which were broadcast live from Radio Sai Asia stream. And as I am speaking to you right now, devotees have gathered in Sai Kulanth Hall, have lined up in Sai Kulanth Hall to place their pranams at Swami's Mahasannidhi. As I said, the Shivaratri festival just concluded 3 days ago. There was Akhanda Bhajan, night-long bhajan, from Monday evening to Tuesday morning. And on Tuesday morning, it concluded with prasadam. After Shivaratri, dear listeners, the temperatures in Prashant Nilayam slightly goes on increasing day by day. It becomes hotter and hotter. Days become hotter and hotter. And that's the reason why the Mandir timings in the evenings changes during the months of summer. So from today onwards, the evening Mandir timings will change by half an hour. Like earlier, the Vedam session used to be from 4:30 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Bhajan session used to be from 5:15 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the evening. But from today onwards, the Vedam session in the evening will be from 5 p.m. to 5:45 p.m. and the Bhajan sessions will be from 5:45 to 6:30 p.m. All right. This year, during Mahashivaratri, Radio Sai started a new initiative. Most of you, I am sure almost all of you will be aware of the new initiative, that is a new YouTube channel of bhajans. So it's a Radio Sai Bhajans YouTube channel. The purpose of this YouTube channel is that every day a new Sai Bhajan with a video will be uploaded in this YouTube channel. The video will have Swami's Darshan. So Swami's Darshan and Bhajan, every day one clip will be uploaded. And it's called Radio Sai Bhajans. The YouTube channel is called Radio Sai Bhajans. So you all can subscribe to this YouTube channel, Radio Sai Bhajans. And every day one video clip of Swami's Darshan with Swami's Bhajan will be uploaded. So with that, dear listeners, now Radio Sai has got 4 YouTube channels. Are you aware of it? One is the main Radio Sai YouTube channel. That is the first one. In fact, this was started long, long ago. And the second one was Radio Sai Telugu YouTube channel. And the third one, which started in the Christmas, last year, Christmas of 2018, is Radio Sai Hindi YouTube channel. And now, during Mahashivaratri, we started Radio Sai Bhajans YouTube channel. So, Radio Sai has got 4 YouTube channels. That is, one is main Radio Sai YouTube channel. The second is Radio Sai Telugu YouTube channel. The third is Radio Sai Hindi YouTube channel. And the fourth is Radio Sai Bhajans YouTube channel. Alright, dear listeners. Now, coming back to the segment Morning Glory. Today, I'll be playing for you an episode of Tryst with Divinity. But before that, let me read out for you today's science-biased message. So, as always, today's science-biased message also has got a question. And this question has got an answer, which is taken from Swami's Divine Discourse. The question goes like this. Have we lit the lamp of wisdom within? And Bhagwan lovingly reminds us today to introspect. And I read out from Swami's Divine Discourse, an excerpt from Swami's Divine Discourse, I quote, "To light a lamp, you need four things, a container, oil, a wick, and a matchbox. If any one of these is missing, you cannot light the lamp. This lamp can, however, remove only the outside darkness. How is the darkness in the heart to be removed? It can be dispelled only by the light of wisdom, Jnana Jyoti. How is this light of wisdom, this spiritual light, to be lit? This also needs four elements. Detachment, Vairagya, is the container. Devotion, Bhakti, is the oil. One-pointed concentration, Ekagrita, is the wick. And knowledge of the supreme truth, Jnana, is the matchstick. Without these four, the light of spiritual wisdom cannot shine. Of these, primary requisite is the spirit of Vairagya, renunciation. Without detachment, all knowledge of scriptures is of no avail. What is this detachment? It is absence of attachment to the body. Give up the ego feeling, which makes one think of the I all the time." Unquote. This excerpt was taken from Swami's Divine Discourse, which he delivered on 9th of November in the year 1988. All right, dear listeners, with that, now I play the main part of today's Morning Glory segment, that is an episode of a radio series, Tryst with Divinity, which is a conversation with Dr. Rajneesh Talwar. And in conversation with him is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. Have a listen, please.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with individuals whose lives have been touched and transformed by Bhagwan Baba. Today, we have with us an oncologist whose surgeries and surgical precision is widely featured on YouTube and followed by surgeons around the world. But he is here to talk to us more about the inner surgery, the spiritual nip and tuck that has brought him where he is today. Our honored guest is Dr. Rajneesh Talwar, MS Surgery, Fellow Onco-Surgery, Tata Memorial Hospital, Bombay. Dr. Rajneesh Talwar is a colonel in the Indian Armed Forces Medical Services and he heads the Department of Onco-Surgery at R&R Hospital, that is the Research and Referral Hospital, New Delhi. Sairam, Dr. Talwar, and a very warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam, sister.
Dr. Talwar, I understand that you first heard about Bhagwan when you were in your 12th standard in your high school in 1978 in Jalandhar, Punjab, because there was some Vibhuti manifestation happening in your uncle's house, but that didn't do much for you.
No. That was 78. I've just entered the medical college and we had information. In fact, I witnessed it also, that there was a spray of Vibhuti in my very dear uncle's house. But my father himself was an agnostic. My mother, though a bhakta, we were told always to be cautious about these phenomena. There's magic about it, there are tricks about it. And then my mother always guided us that physical gurus are to be kept a distance from. So I, as a partly an agnostic, partly a critic, partly a questioner, never could believe that this could be true. So it did make a place in the heart, yet never manifest really for a couple of years.
I see. But then it was, I guess, in 1991 when you were in the mountains of Uttaranchal. You were a young captain and army surgeon at Pithorgarh. And that's when a picture of Baba came into your life?
Oh, yes. There was a very revered senior officer, a brigadier by rank, Brigadier Tur. He was my mentor in tennis, you know. He used to teach me tennis and I really appreciated his confidence and his persona. He was a very wonderful human being, you know. And he would always raise his hand and bless people and say, "Baba sab theek karenge." He was a Sadaji, so I thought that he's talking about Nanak Baba. He never discussed this matter with me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I really personally needed some miracle to happen, I wanted some, administrative favor from the army headquarters. And I reached the army headquarters where I found that it is impossible for me to get through and, introduce myself and reach the senior consultant whom I intended to. So I went over to Brigadier Tur. He also didn't have a practical answer. But what he did was he took out a photograph of Baba out of his wallet and put it in my front pocket. And he says, keep this photograph in your pocket. And if it helps you do all that you need, you keep it with you. Otherwise, you tear it off and throw it. I liked the confidence and I liked the magic about the words which he uttered. As a sensible, senior, educated army soldier, that he is believing so much in a photograph whom, yes, I had also heard about in 78 that there are Vibhuti manifests and other things. So I did put in my pocket, and the wonder of wonders, everything happened the way I could have not even dreamt, So this photograph kind of stayed with me. Not that it still made any significant change in my thinking or my lifestyle or my faith, but the photograph stayed with me as a miracle photograph. Whatever I wanted really happened.
Your little genie's magic lamp.
Absolutely, yes.
And your army career, I'm sure it involved a lot of transfers from place to place.
Yeah, from Pitharagarh I was posted to Chennai, which later on I felt that it was all Swami getting me closer to him.
And in Chennai you met another eminent Sai devotee.
Oh yes, Chennai I met at that time Colonel Verma. Presently he's looking after the General Hospital here, Puttaparthi. Vice Marshal Verma. Yeah.
Vice Air Marshal Dr. Verma.
Yeah.
Our very own head of our superintendent of our Sri Satya Sai General Hospital.
Oh yes. Again a revered gentleman. He also impressed me by his persona. And, I found it intriguing that this photograph of Swami was decorated on his office table.
Why? And, people can have icons of their liking.
Yes, but as a young man and as a... My grooming was scientific and agnostic and critical.
Mm-hmm.
So in my heart I felt objectionable that why should there be a photograph of another human on the office table of my commanding officer. So I did question him, what is this, who is this and why here? He said he's my guru. And I was about 30 at that time, maybe not even 30. So I couldn't hide the objection in my heart, welling up in my heart. And I said, why do you need a guru? Oh, he said, that's very personal. He's a man of few words. You may have interacted with him. So he said, that's very personal. Anyway, I questioned that, who is he and would you tell me? So he found at that time that it was unnecessary. And a young officer is trying to gain proximity and photograph is becoming a medium. So he brushed the thought aside and he kept the relationship of a professional, of a CO with a young officer. He appreciated me as a surgeon. I was always appreciated as a surgeon. So my clientele and my seniors were always very happy with my surgeries. So that was our relationship. But then I continued to pester him each, few weeks whenever I go to his office. That, sir, would you not tell me about your guru? He wouldn't. It was, I think, about 6 or 7 months of my repeated pestering that he gave me a book. And this was Dr. Fenibanda's book, The Vision of the Divine. Yeah. And that's what perhaps did the magic. I read the book and initially it created within me an uproar, a feeling as if there was something abnormal about this gentleman.
Why? What did you think was abnormal about Swami?
Swami, if we are a student of Vedanta, which I had no nearness to, I had not even heard what Vedanta is. So if we are a student of Vedanta, yes, we can comprehend that the truest, the highest Advaita is to know that I am God and everything around is God.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not my case, I had no such information, no such grooming, no such knowledge that there is something called that I am God.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read that Swami is God, the creator, and he says it from childhood, I actually felt that perhaps there's something wrong and maybe he's a schizophrenic, that he's talking about himself like that. So that was my initial reaction.
Multiple personalities or something?
Oh, yes. But all the same, I was fortunate that I developed a feeling of going over and having a look at this abnormal phenomenon rather than just brushing it away.
Did it help that Dr. Fanny Bunda was a man of medicine? Science? He was a dentist?
No. You know, as a young man, as a scientist, let me confess with you, we think that everybody else is mad and I alone am a sensible chap. I think you might agree with me. As a scientist, we all feel, or as a growing young man, we all feel that I am the only normal chap and rest everybody seems to be a fool. And there are millions of people following Swami. And I thought they're all a bunch of fools, you know.
Yeah, you know, people, sheeple, moth,
yes,
psychology.
Absolutely.
So, how did the first visit to Puttaparthi happen and what was it like?
I soon requested my mother to come along. We both visited Puttaparthi.
From Chennai?
From Chennai, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a night bus, you know. In those days, we used to get down at Dharmavaram and then take another bus, you know. I vaguely remember. Anyway, so I reached here. I was amidst those 5,000-10,000 people sitting here. In those days, Purnachandra Hall had not come up. Kulwant Hall was not. I'm sorry.
Kulwant Hall had not come up. PC Auditorium was there.
Yeah. But Kulwant Hall wasn't
there. We sat for darshan in the open.
On the sands.
Yes.
So we sat down. There was an elderly gentleman by my side, an Englishman, who observed that I seemed to be a first-time visitor. Because I was not even keeping my hands folded when Swami came in, you know. So he nudged me a message that he's got, you know, fold your hands. So, out of courtesy, I also did that. Then, you know, I could converse with him. So, I asked him, what is this people extending letters to Swami, you know? So, he says, you also write anything. Mm-hmm. If Swami takes it or blesses you, your wish will be granted.
Mm-hmm.
So, I consider it to be sort of a fairy tale going on. And people all kind of like a herd of sheep hypnotized into believing him to be God. So, anyway, if that be so, I am also here. Let me also kind of play the game, as everyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be doing out of some abnormal belief, but I was curious, inquisitive. So he gave me a piece of paper, tore a piece of paper, sort of a newspaper bit. And I looked at him as if that this doesn't look to be all right. He says, no, he's God, don't get formal. Oh, very well. So I thought I'll write something. Ask Swami, is God, and suppose he is. So my first letter was, if you are God.
Okay.
And now began my
wish list.
My list, you know, thinking, what should I ask for? Because I can't ask for an endless list.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask for something which is most prominent in my mind. And he had already started walking down the aisle. And I knew that he would reach me in 1 to 3 minutes. So I had to quickly decide what to write. Should I ask for a Merc or a BMW? Or should I ask for a big house? Or should I ask for a super speciality? I was those days a surgeon. And super speciality was very high on my mind, that should I ask for oncology or GI surgery or what surgery do I want to do? But I had to quickly decide, you know. And without my knowing it, without my knowing the reason for it, I wrote down, if you're God, which I'd already written, please give me peace.
The Mercedes and the BMW
they
fell by the wayside.
Fell by the way. And I just wrote down, you give me peace. Not that I was evidently, obviously lacking any peace. Not that I had ever thought about this concept of peace. But I wrote down, if you're God, give me peace. Swami was quite away from me because I was deep down in the crowd. So there's no way I could have handed him over the chit, you know. But he looked at me for a second or so and blessed me.
By raising his hand?
By raising his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that he conveyed to me that there is no greater gift that he has within his treasure chest.
Than the one you'd asked for.
One had asked for. And he smiled and gave me a knowing smile as if there couldn't have been anything greater that you asked for on the first visit
but
of yours.
But the letter remained with you.
The letter remained with me. The letter remained with me and he said that there can't be anything pricier than what you asked on your first visit. But anyway, I brushed that aside. I thought this is all a hypnotism game going on. So he's trying to hypnotize me also. So I didn't want to be hypnotized. I kept away. And I put that thing in my pocket and then threw it away. And that's what the first visit was, really. But the magic happened that from that moment, I started as if floating in the air, you know. My feet wouldn't touch the ground.
Some inner happiness? You grew wings?
I was like, I grew wings. And that was not momentary. That lasted for a fortnight, even after reaching back Chennai. To the extent that my colleagues and friends started pointing out that something has happened to you. You're not the same person. You're not the same surgeon. My operating room assistants pointed out, the nursing officers pointed out, that you don't shout around, you don't throw away instruments in anger. You are not the same person. And I also felt that my feet are not touching the ground. I don't need my drinks. I don't need my smoking. I don't need the things which I was so heavily into. I'm as such light and enjoying myself. That was the feeling which stayed with me for a fortnight.
Mm-hmm.
And within that fortnight, with a lot of introspection that he has hypnotized me, came the very, very beatifying, very blessed thought that it is a welcome hypnotism. Let me call it hypnotism for want of a better word, because I don't know another word. Let me say it is hypnotism, but don't I want to be hypnotized?
You love being under the spell.
I want it.
Welcome spell, huh?
I was trying to get this from all the drinks which I was immersed into. We started drinking right from my college days, and that's the society many of us are brought up in. So the drinks were always falling short and one could never feel that high, you know. Even at the end of half a bottle of whiskey, I never felt that high. And all those cigarettes and all those other things medical graduates get into, you know, without naming them. So I had never felt that happy. And I started craving for that hypnotism. That's the word that I knew at that time, mesmerism, hypnotism, for which people had been always cautioning, you know, that stay away from these men, they can hypnotize you. So I felt that, yes, he has hypnotized me, but let me get more and more hypnotized. And in a fortnight's time, I went to General Verma, Colonel Verma at that time, and I said, sir, I want some leave. I want to go to Puttaparthi again. He did ask me that last fortnight you'd been. I had been as a, you know, as an inquirer out of curiosity. Now something seems to be happening within me and I want to go and taste it better all over again. He said, very fine. You have your leave, entitled leave, and you can take as many days as you want. So that's when I took about a week's leave and I was here in Puttaparthi back again. In a fortnight's time, that was alone.
Mm-hmm.
Alone. I really wanted to taste it now.
Mm-hmm. How did that go?
Oh, that was fantastic. Wonderful. In the first day only, Swami again blessed me from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked to me again from a distance, aerial, spirit to spirit, heart to heart. And he told me, don't begin on an exercise of exploring me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to advertise me. I can be the least affected if you call me a magician or a human. It doesn't affect me at all. What matters to me and to you is that what do you know about yourself and does it enhance you or not? If you can know yourself, then rest assured that you'll start having glimpses of me also.
Mm-hmm.
But that's even not important. To have glimpses of me is not important. To have glimpses of yourself is more important because that's going to elevate you. And yes, the second thing is that I have put you on the Mount Everest. Yes.
That, meaning what?
Meaning that I did raise your consciousness for this 15 days. You call it hypnotism or mesmerism, call it whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have definitely raised you to the level of Mount Everest.
Okay.
Now you have come here for what? You have come here to ask me to keep you there. Now let me tell you, I'll not keep you there. You will keep yourselves there.
Now how did you receive your effort?
Now all this was happening heart to heart.
Okay.
I was just sitting in the darshans and he was sitting in front.
And you were hearing this from within?
There was no talk going on.
No physical contact?
No physical contact.
Except you could see him?
I could see him.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him and I could feel all that happening within me. That, you see, take me as a teacher, and a teacher is a must. For you to be a surgeon also, you had required a teacher. to know how to live, you require a teacher. And I am that teacher, and this is what is called a guru. I'll teach you how to live, how to think, how to perceive, how to talk, how to relate yourselves with others, and how to relate yourselves with yourself. And that will evolve you. I said, how would I learn all that? He says, I have not come to teach anything new. Absolutely nothing new. It is just that your Vedanta and your Qurans and your Bhagavad Gita and your Ramayans, you had never tried to understand. And even if you did try, you required a teacher. I am that teacher who will make you understand your own religion, your own scriptures, and that will keep you at that level which you presently seem to be in. And I became a serious student of Swami. Such a serious student that all my annual leaves, as an army officer, we get 2 months annual leaves and about 20 days of casual leave. All my annual leaves and casual leaves were spent in Puttaparthi. And so much so that people here identified me as Swami's student because, you know, I looked like that. And I was often here. So they thought and they asked me, are you Swami student? And I also started from my heart saying, yes, I'm a Swami student because I'm actually a student.
You were learning.
I was learning.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So thus began your journey of self-inquiry.
Absolutely.
Know thyself. Who am I?
I got obsessed about it. Yes. Mm-hmm. I got obsessed about it. I read about be it Vedanta or be it Bhagavad Gita or be it Swami's Vahinis basically. You know, I always used to call that all the books which are available in the bookstores are generally magazines of Swami. The books written by us devotees on Swami. But if one really wants to read what Swami himself says, it has to be Vahinis.
Yeah, it has to be from the source.
Vahini, from the source.
And Vahinis and the Satyasai speaks. And a lot of people go for the entertainment and
yes.
the experiences. But
yes.
if you really want to be a true student, you have to go back to the source.
Absolutely.
That's
yes.
the most organic
yes.
nourishment
so
for your
soul. So I immersed
soul.
Myself into Vahinis.
Mm-hmm.
And most interesting thing was that the right book used to be in my hands. A book which I could understand.
Mm.
Initial days, you can't understand very heavy text, you know. So very easy books used to come to my hand those days. And then as I grew better and better, deeper and deeper text used to come to my hands.
Now, shortly after this, you were at the Tata Memorial Hospital studying oncology.
I was doing fellowship in oncosurgery in Tata Hospital from
in
96,
Bombay.
Yeah, from 96 to 98, yeah.
And there was quite a turning point again in your life,
oh,
there.
Oh, yes, because I had become abnormally obsessed about this seeking under the umbrella of Swami. So it appeared that Swami has made me abnormal. Although it was the self-seeking which had made me look abnormal for people, you know. People identified me to be something having gone wrong, you know, inside. So
why? Was your behavior any odd?
Oh, yes. I became too much of an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And I would interact much lesser because I was immersed in studies, you know. I used to recall that my mother used to tell me that when you were doing your MS, there was beautiful flowers along the aisle from my room to her room.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never noticed those flowers ever till the day I passed MS. And I said, oh, what beautiful dahlias and pansies and beautiful flowers are growing on the side. She said that this was there for the last 2 years. You never noticed them. Yes, it happens, you know, when you get obsessed about something. Mind is very peculiar, as Swami tells us, that can focus at one thing at a time. It cannot focus at a million things at a time. If I'm looking at you, I'm only looking at you. I can't look at the bottle also. So I was concentrating on this self-seeking, on the Swami's teachings, and of course on Swami, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the quest had become so obsessive that I needed nothing else but reaching the goal, you know.
So you were longing, pining.
Longing, pining. It had reached a pinnacle on one fine day when everything happened, you know.
Tell us about it. What was that experience like? You were sharing your dormitory with some others?
I was. We were three doctors sharing a dormitory. Since meeting Swami, I started getting up at 5 in the morning and beginning some meditation, whatever way I at that time comprehended, or reading a Vahini. And then this time became earlier and earlier and earlier, and it came down to 3 o'clock, 2:30 also. So I would sleep early and I would get up very early. I would sleep early because I wanted to get up early.
But as a surgeon, didn't you have night duties?
No, that was, the work was never coming in the way. Work was getting even better, better, better. Because, I don't know, when there's inner peace, you know, the efficiency increases. It's logical, it's scientific. when there is inner peace, efficiency always keeps rising. And if I am dying to do a work better and better, I may not be able to do it as well. But if there's an inner quiet, that work itself gets better. And particularly so in a subject like surgery, where your stability of mind and hands is paramount. Without my wanting it, started happening in a magical way. Hands started moving like a magician. Without my wanting to train them, they started, you know, moving beautifully. Everybody started commenting that what has happened, you know. Kind of something uncanny about the hand movements. And my surgical videos on the net also, they invite a lot of correspondence and people do ask me about the trick behind the hand movements.
What do you tell them?
I tell them it's from the right hemisphere, it's not from the left hemisphere. So some people do understand, some people find it a bit esoteric. And I do tell them that, you see, it's the left hemisphere which believes in logic and intellect. It's the right hemisphere of our brains, which is about emotions and about inner peace, you know. So if you reach a state of inner peace, things start working like magic. Everything, in fact, in life, not just about surgery. Everything in life, your relationships, profession, anything and everything starts working amazingly beautiful if you reach that state of inner peace. So we were talking about the Tata Memorial days, you know. So I had reached that state where the pining had reached its crescendo. That morning, it was the 2nd of July, 1996, I can never forget that. 4 o'clock in the morning, I was in that state of pining because I couldn't get sleep also those days. The pining was so much. So what happens? I feel Swami had appeared before me in body because I felt that I could feel his robe. I felt that I could feel his hand on my head. And I could, as if, hold him in my arms and hands. You know.
Were your eyes open or closed?
My eyes were open, very much open. Yet, if somebody says that, if others could also see him, no. Had others been around or awake, they were sleeping, by the way. But if they had been, they wouldn't have felt him because he was more real than body. Yet, I would say he was not the body. He was not really physically there because the date could not be forgotten. It changed my life. It changed my outlook. It changed everything about me.
Did you communicate?
From that day. I did talk to Swami because he was there. So I could talk to him, I could relate with him, and he also talked with me. He did ask me, what do you want?
In what language?
If you ask me, I would not be able to say it was in Hindi or English, but it was in the language which I was thinking in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
His language is not
the
only
heart,
spoken,
yeah.
It's thought also. We exactly. never think without a language.
Mm.
So I was thinking in that language, whatever, generally it's in English.
Mm.
So I was thinking and he said that, what do you want? And I said, Swami, you've never prepared me for asking for anything. And I've always asked for you only. And you have come. So what can I ask you for? He blessed me. He also said that I should, you know, now that he has appeared, which I wanted ever, I should take something from him. When I continued to persevere that I don't really know what to ask for, he says that, what do you want? I said, I want only God. I only want you. And you are God. You have appeared before me. So he says, if you want only me, you would be finished.
Me?
For a while I didn't understand what does it mean. But he elaborated on it. He said, professionally, socially, financially, three aspects which matter to a man, they will all be finished. There will be nothing left about you. I said, Swami, let that be. You seem to have prepared me to say this yes, you know. Not that I can say it on my own. You seem to have given me the strength also to accept that, okay, let me be through, let me be over. You but be with me, please. Keep holding me like this. And he says, so be it. He looked, in fact, serious. He says, so be it. And indeed he demonstrated to me in the next 2 years, 3 years, from 96 to 99, that everything which is visible to the world, which is visible to me as the physical self, went out of my hands. Everything. But all along, I was floating in the air because Swami was holding me. Not just holding me, it appeared as if I was in his arms, you know.
Now, this experience where you interacted with him in the dormitory, how did it conclude?
It concluded very beautifully. When he said, okay, let that be, then he says, okay, then I can't fly out of the window or I can't disappear into nothingness. I merge into you and I'll take care of you. And he kind of became vapors which went into my body. This was all very beautiful experiences. They're spiritual experiences. And yes, you did comment that it looks like I had become schizophrenic, which I had been calling him all along. It was that kind of an abnormal feeling, supernormal feeling. Mm-hmm. What people call abnormal, I call it supernormal. Mm-hmm. But let's not call them either ab or super. Let's call them paranormal. They are not comprehensible to the normal existence, you know. Mm-hmm.
Now then, when Swami spoke to you about these three zeros we often hear, he says,
yes,
you know, you're going to lose everything financially, socially, professionally. What happened?
Really, for those 3 years, it was like a vanvas, you know. It was like everything flying out of my hands. Socially, financially, professionally, I became, so to say, a non-entity. I, as if, was not existing.
But did you suffer a series of setbacks?
Setbacks, as far as, yes, my mother's terminology, she was very worried that what is happening. She would go to pundits and jyotishis to get some solutions about what is, you know, bad period in my son's life.
So you went
why
through
everything
series.
Is series and series of everything seemingly going against me. I would again and again say seemingly because within my heart I was
so happy.
I was so very happy. Mm-hmm. Nothing was happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
To the point, to the extent that there were sometimes tears rolling down in streams down the cheeks and tears of such pain that I would pick some tears on my finger and see whether they are red or they are white. Is it blood or is it actual tears? I mean, the tears of that kind of a pain.
But was this the
mental
pain for your disappointments or?
No, really. I was still very, very happy. It's an abnormal
state. What were you
state.
Aching for? The agony was for Baba?
No, there was no agony. There was no agony after that. Baba was with me.
Mm-hmm. So why were you crying then?
You see, when everything was going topsy-turvy, in my family life, in my professional life, in my financial aspects, when everything was going out of hands, sometimes there were situations that there was unbearable pain, but in that unbearable pain also, I felt that I was extremely happy. I was enjoying it. Just to give you an example, unrelated, you know, as they say, suffering is optional. Pain is inevitable in life. So that means pain and suffering are two different dimensions. Pain can come, but suffer or not to suffer is in your hands. So when God is with you, you can't suffer. I was never suffering. But yes, there were moments when I was actually in pain, physical, mental, deep down pain in the heart, when things were going out of my hands and I wanted that this should not happen to me. So I was in pain, yet, but I was never suffering, you know. I was never suffering. In a lighter mood, I would share with you that once I had a catch in the back, I was riveted to the ground. I couldn't move an inch, you know, when the disc kind of nudges on the nerves.
Mm.
You can't move an inch when severe catch in the back. My mother was worrying by my bedside and she was trying to hold my hand and comfort me and I was trying to tell her that I'm enjoying myself, I'm very happy. She said, if you're so happy, then show me a movement. Oh, I said, I can't move, but I'm very happy. So she would not understand. She says, what is this happiness? You can't move an inch and you say, I'm very happy. No, I said, I can't make you understand, but I'm very happy. Now that happiness comes in a state of spiritual elevation, enlightenment, realization, call it whatever words. So with Swami having merged molecule to molecule within, it kept me in a state of, you know, feet wouldn't touch the ground, my body as if was levitated. I've always been living like that for now about say 17 odd years since 96.
And with obviously you came out of that difficult situation.
Yes, he has been giving me visions. He's been telling me about future, you know. In 99 he told me, now that you have withstood the tests and you want only me, and wherever I live, the creator of this universe, how can there be any deficiency there?
Mm-hmm.
Now everything is going to come around you, be it financial, be it professional, be it social, you will be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I found that everything started changing. I became again a sought after oncosurgeon. My family life became straightened. Financially, everything started pouring in. And I became visibly full and filled. Earlier, I was full and filled from within only. And since 99, everything took a change, you know.
That's incredibly interesting to know. Every time Bhagwan communicates with you, I understand all this deep communication that you experience with Bhagwan has nothing to do with his physical form.
Not really. Physically, Swami has allowed me to touch him only a counted few times.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've had the good fortune of being physically at his feet for more than a minute once,
mm-hmm.
and a few seconds a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
indeed I've had. And yes, I've had received some vibhuti from him once, twice, thrice. And they've all been evidences that yes, I'm with you. And not that it was only that vision in my Tata Memorial mm-hmm. room. He proved it also in Puttaparthi. He told me, while he was merging back into me
mm-hmm.
at my room in Tata Memorial, he told me, in a month's time, you will come to Puttaparthi and I'll give you a proof that I had come to your room.
Mm-hmm.
He did tell me. And yes, within that July, on the 30th, I happened to be here. And this is where Swami proved that, yes, he had come to my room.
So today, as you head a very significant section of medical care, the oncology surgeries, how does Swami play a role in what you do and how you do it?
Me as a person, what Swami has trained me like, what He has brought me up like as a son, is that I should be absolutely, truly, completely, 100% surrendered to Him and His will. I am 100% surrendered to Him by His grace. As a manifestation of that surrender, I see miracles every moment. Not that I want everything to go tickety-boo, but I may confess that everything is going wonderfully, beautifully. Be it my surgeries, be it my running the department, be it as an officer in the Indian Army. Yeah, there is one thing which keeps irking me. That is my inability to socialize in the party life, which is necessary part of the army life, which amazingly people have been forgiving me for that. I'm unable to hold a glass and, you know, socialize the parties the way it is expected.
Yeah, and it's such a part of your culture,
it's a part
army
of the
culture.
I don't drink and I avoid a bit too much of talking. I stay in the bliss which Swami keeps me in. Involve myself with the efficiency of the department, that's about it. And otherwise, social relationships, which deals with helping anyone whom I can, as Swami teaches us. But I'm unable to socialize the way the army parties expect us to do. That's the only thing which I would say amiss, and not going with the stream, you know. Otherwise, I'm just like anybody else.
Does it affect your relationship with your peers, or does it bother you how they evaluate you because you are socially out of place in that culture?
Not that it bothers me ever, because Swami, the way He stays with me, He's blessed me with a special blessing that, yeah, I permit you to stay the way you are. You don't have to change, bend rules of your own conscience, and you live the way you are. I'll take care of you. And He gives me such unmistakable signs that I am like I am. And all my seniors and colleagues and peers, they accept me as I am.
Now, you spoke of being in a state of surrender. Would you care to explain what that means for a person who has to make so many decisions, conscious decisions, as a head of a department and someone who's dealing with life and death situation moment to moment?
It is quite logical, or I would say scientific, to say that we must focus on what is in my hands and do it effectively and efficiently and sincerely. And whatever be the result, consider it to be holy and His will. Isn't it logical and scientific and perhaps a wiser way of living, even if one uses common sense and nothing about spirituality? So this is what surrender is about. Do your work well, efficiently, happily, lovefully, sincerely. And whatever be the result, know it to be success, rather than evaluating it and saying that it is a failure this time and a success next time. Whatever happens, I consider it to be a success. Now, if you ask me how are the results of the surgery, I would say 99% they are actually, in the physical sense also, they are amazingly successful or wonderful. But we have already accepted that whatever be the result, we will call it success in a spiritual way, in a wiser way. Whatever happens, if I was to come here to Puttaparthi and I was told that there's not going to be lights and not going to be any water, that's Swami's will. It is wonderful. We are enjoying it. Rather than saying, oh, why there is no light? Why there is no water? How would we live? And that I attributed to my wife, that she is equally as much with me, and I from her heart know that she is also not resenting that we seemingly appear to be uncomfortable. Like the children tell us that there is no light, they are uncomfortable. They also beautifully don't really air it. They may be having it in their heart. They also enjoying themselves, in fact. So, I mean, surrender means that whatever is happening is wonderfully, amazingly good.
Now, your life's journey is very interesting. You come from a background of science and agnosticism, and then you went through this process of what may be described as breaking everything apart and starting from bottom up all the way. And we've read such stories in the biographies of saints and sages of the past. Now, you're a professional person living in 21st century India in the national capital. You see lots of political drama happening around you in a country where there's serious law and order issues. Where do you see everything going from the place that you are? You seem to be in a totally different sphere where everything is God-driven, God-led, God-determined, God-surrendered. And then there is another narrative going on the side, but there's so much of disparity, corruption, lawlessness, dishonesty. How do you reconcile these two narratives happening in your life? You don't live in isolation, in your own bubble, within your head. Obviously, you're experiencing this continuous communication with Swami, as you say. But around you, things are not similar. The temperature and the climate around you is very different.
Yeah, you're very right. But you see, as we learn from the science called spirituality, and as we evolve as human beings within the sphere of science, we realize that the mind can only focus on one thing. If the mind is obsessed and focused about love, efficiency, bliss, sincerity, it can't focus on the other aspect of life which you happen to touch about, that what all is happening around the world, you know, seemingly happening. To me, it appears that my job is to stay focused on what I should be doing.
But you can't live in isolation.
If I can mind my own business, everything falls into shape. If all of us start minding our own business, there will be peace and tranquility all around. So if I can only sort out my sphere where I have a control over, I think that's what concerns me, and I concern myself with looking after whatever is within my hands and not extending my influence over to national and international subjects and aspects of life which I have no control over. I don't really waste my time in thinking what Mr. Manmohan Singh Ji should be doing, because it is, I think, a wastage of my time. My thinking about what he should be doing is a waste of time. He should be thinking what he should be doing. And if I ever happen to be, if God's will be that I am on the other side of the table, then I should be thinking at that time what I can be doing, rather than presently thinking what I should be doing. Or if I waste my time in thinking what my director general should be doing, I think that's also wasting my time. I should only focus my attention on what I should do to a particular patient whom I'm going to handle tomorrow, or what I should be doing as the head of the department. And that's what I really concern myself with.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a society, are we not large organism? And if one cell is ailing, you're a doctor, if one cell decides to mutate, it can affect a larger group of cells?
Indeed, and if one cell mutates into a blissful state of being, mm-hmm. then also I can have a huge impact on my surroundings. And that's what I think I am being able to be utilized as a tool in Swami's hands.
Nice perspective.
That I keep myself happy, comfortable, cheerful, and that definitely has an impact on my family, my neighbors, in my workplace, and wherever I move around.
Very nice perspective, Doc. Now, from where you are, the place, the space that you are at as a person in your own evolution, where do you see the future of humanity headed?
Oh, I think there was no profounder a scientist as Darwin was, mm-hmm. who was such a firm believer of evolution. And I think every one of us is evolving. All this corruption, all this suffering is all evolving. All of us are evolving into blissful, beneficent human beings, peaceful, beneficent, sincere human beings. It's only a matter of time. If I could evolve into what I am presently, and I consider it to be evolution, and we are persistently, constantly evolving, I'm also evolving, you're also evolving. And what do I mean by evolution? Is ever at peace within myself, ever at peace with my surroundings. If I can be, and if everyone can be, and I'm sure everyone is going to be in its own time. Not that everything happens at one time with everybody at one time. It'll be in each individual's life, it will come about. It will come about today or tomorrow.
It's a personal process for each person.
It's a personal process. All that everybody is suffering is because we don't want to finally suffer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just happening temporarily, presently. And tomorrow it should not be happening if we are consciously living.
The golden age, people talk of this shift happening in consciousness. What's your take on that?
I think it's imaginary. I think, if I may say so, I don't want to make a statement, but I think it's happening for everybody. A golden age, when it happens within me, I find everything golden. I don't find that we are living in a Kalyuga. I think we are living in a Satyuga, because I live in a Satyuga. So it's imperative for every individual to create a Satyuga for himself, and then there will be everything fine with him, around him. Nobody will come and fight with him. When I'm at peace, nobody really fights with me.
You don't have disagreements with your colleagues.
Look at this. You see, between me and my wife, we never even have a discussion which is loud.
Well,
what
if you
to
speak
talk
as
of a
softly
debate,
as you do, it's very unlikely it will happen.
It never happens. I mean, not that whatever she thinks in her heart, I perceive it and I do it. And whatever I think in my heart, she does it. We never have an argument.
Mm.
And so is the state with my children also. Between me and my children, not that my wife and the children do not fight with each other. They do. But with me, nobody fights. In my workplace, in my house, and between me and my neighbors, there's never a fight.
Let's say your superiors decide on a policy matter you don't agree with, and you don't see the worth of it, and you feel maybe a different policy might be more beneficial to the work that you do. How would you resolve that?
You see, in the army life, I would share with you, if an order is given to me, it's a lawful order, I must say, yes, sir, it'll be done.
No insubordination, no room for that.
Never, never.
Hmm.
But then there is a conscience also, the conscience whom we call God, whom we call Swami. The conscience within me tells me that it's not supposed to be done like this. I will give it its time and then go and apologize that I'm very sorry. It wasn't possible for me to do this. Please excuse me if you can. And if you think that no, I have failed in carrying out your instructions, then of course you should punish me the way the best you feel. I am ready for that. So I finally get down to doing whatever my conscience permits me to do. But I never outrightly say no to anything which I am, as a man of the society, not supposed to be doing.
Have you got yourself into trouble for this ever?
Never.
How do your superiors respond? They see your point of view?
They seem to see through my paranormal existence. They like me, they appreciate me, and so far I've always been appreciated wherever I've been. And I attribute it to, from my heart, to Swami's blessings. The mind and the body can never adequately express this, but every moment, every breath of mine is Swami's blessings.
There for all of us, but I guess you are in a state of awareness.
I once asked Swami that you are supposed to be an impartial God. How is it that you are always with me and not with everybody else? He says it is because you need me, others don't need me. Anybody who needs me, I'll be with him as much. It is our need for him. As he says, you don't have to deserve me, you have to desire me. So we are, none of us can deserve God, but we can all desire God. And that's the time in each one of our life. Time comes when we say, I desire God and nothing more and nothing else. And the day we say, I desire God and not the toys from his hands, then he becomes ours really. And that's a very beautiful scientific or metaphysical happening. It can happen into anybody's life if we truly come to a point when we say that I just need you and nothing else. And I look at Swami as one form of God who has come to us as Krishna also and Jesus also and Rama also, anybody.
Well, Dr. Talwar, it's been amazing listening to your bliss experiment. Your life sounds like a big bliss experiment and a lot of learning just listening to you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Great having you on the show. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Dear listeners, you just heard an interview from our Tryst with Divinity series. Our guest was Dr. Rajneesh Talwar, an oncologist from the prestigious R&R Hospital of the Indian Army. He was in conversation with Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. We hope you enjoyed this conversation that traced the journey of Dr. Talwar from a scientific-minded agnostic to an Advaitin who experiences Bhagwan Baba's presence in every second and in all areas of his life as a surgeon and a family man. This interview was recorded at the Radio Sai Studio on October 8, 2013. Your feedback is very important to us and you may email them to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and please continue to stay tuned for our next program, Sai Ram.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay
tuned. Ekunkar Satna करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अर्जुनी से भंग गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद भगवंत गुरु मेरा पार ब्रह्म गुरु भगवंत गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद
सीताराम नाम भजो
सीताराम
every single morning, you can relish the joy of a specially curated and visually rich Sai Bhajan on this new YouTube channel, Radio Sai Bhajans. So do subscribe and share the good news of this channel. One of the salient features of the Sri Satya Sai system of integral education is the harmonious blossoming of the head, the heart, and the hand. Intellectually sharp, physically sound, and spiritually aware, this is how every student should shine. And one glorious illustration of this grooming is the annual sports and cultural meet of the Sri Satya Sai educational institutions that happens on the 11th of January every year in Prashantinilayam. It is an eye-popping display of physical agility, mental stability, and indomitable faith in the power of divinity within. Every year sees adventurous and lovely, innovative and lively events being offered to Bhagwan, many of them needing great courage and actually months and years of practice. But Bhagwan's students pick up and perform them in just 15 days. One such vibrant display was the performance of Lion Dance by the students in 2002. It was a Herculean task to master this art in 2 weeks, but for the students, nothing is impossible. With Swami, everything is Him possible. And Swami's deep involvement in this, right from the practice sessions, was the highlight of this offering. In fact, in a moving discourse, Swami Himself recalled an anecdote that happened during the rehearsal session.
Darjeeling boy, he light dance lopala uddanna kudanu venaka Swami ki aashcharyakaramainatvanti yokka drushyanni nirupinchalani paiki ekkadu 12 adugula paiki. అక్కడ నుంచి జారి పడ్డాడు. పడేటప్పటికి మెడ చాలా వాచిపోయింది. అప్పుడు నాయన, నీవు కొన్ని దినాలు రెస్ట్ తీసుకో, నీ స్థానానికి ఇంకొక నందించమని చెప్పాను. అబ్బాయి చెప్పాడు, స్వామి, నా జీవితం మీ నిమిత్తమై ఏర్పడినటువంటిది. మీకు అర్పితం కాకుండా ఇంకొకరికి ఈ స్థానంలో నేను ఎట్టు చోటిస్తాను, కట్టుబట్టి సాధిస్తానని చెప్పని ప్రమాణం చేశాడు. దీక్షకై నాకెంతయో మనసు ఆనందపడింది. నేను చేయి పెట్టి మెడపైన తిద్ది ఇంకా సరిపోతుంది పోమన్నాను. వారి వారి సంకల్పంను పురస్కరించుకుని నా యొక్క సంకల్పం కూడాను అభివృద్ధి అవుతూ వస్తుంది. కట్టగడపటికి ఆ స్థానంలో ఆ అబ్బాయే దీనికి తగినటువంటి ప్రదర్శన చేసి చాలా ఆనందపరిచాడు.
జస్ట్ లైక్ దిస్ డార్జిలింగ్ బాయ్, ఇఫ్ అవర్ హార్ట్స్ బీట్ ఓన్లీ ఫర్ సాయి, if we do everything only to bring a smile on his face, then our lives will become a series of celebrations of his miraculous presence. In fact, the universe will rearrange itself to ensure that his love protects us like the eyelids protect the eye.
Pranam ante pillalandarki pranam.
Boys take Bhagavan as their very life.
పిల్లలకి ఏ విధ డిసప్పాయింట్ కాకూడదు.
బాయ్స్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి డిసప్పాయింటెడ్.
పిల్లలకి ఏ విధమైనటువంటి అనానుకూలములు సంభవించకూడదు.
స్టూడెంట్స్ షుడ్ నెవర్ ఫేస్ ఎనీ ఇన్కన్వీనియన్సెస్.
పిల్లలందరూ క్షేమంగా ఉండాలి.
బాయ్స్ షుడ్ బి సేఫ్ అండ్ సెక్యూర్.
పిల్లలే నా ప్రాపర్టీ అని అనేక పర్యాయం చెప్పాను.
భగవాన్ సెడ్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ఆర్ హిస్ ప్రాపర్టీ.
పిల్లలు క్షేమంగా ఉంటేనే నాకు క్షేమం.
When boys are secure, Bhagwan.
పిల్లలు ఆనందంగా ఉంటేనే నాకు ఆనందము. అంత తల్లి కంటే 1000 తల్లుల ప్రేమ కంటే ఎక్కువగా చూస్తుంటాడు స్వామి. దంట ఇంట కంట ఉండి అన్ని విధానం నిన్ను సంరక్షిస్తాడు.
గాడ్ ఈస్ విత్ యూ, ఇన్ యూ, అబౌవ్ యూ, బిలో యూ, అరౌండ్ యూ, అండ్ విల్ టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ యూ.
మీ బెస్ట్ ఫ్రెండ్ ఇస్ గాడ్.
హూ ఇస్ యువర్ బెస్ట్ ఫ్రెండ్? గాడ్ ఈస్ యువర్ బెస్ట్ ఫ్రెండ్.
पूछो ना कैसी है मेरी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. अरे पूछो ना कैसी है साईं माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा, मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ. मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा, मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ. छोड़ दो हर एक रिश्ता तोड़ दो, तू जो कहे माँ दुनिया क्या है, मैं संसार भी छोड़ दो. तू जो कहे माँ दुनिया क्या है, मैं संसार भी छोड़ दो. गीता और कुरान जैसी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. अरे गीता और कुरान जैसी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. वृंदावन के फूल है माँ, तुम में समा जाए माँ. वृंदावन के फूल है माँ, तुम में समा जाए माँ. दिल में बसने वाली साई माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा, मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ. अरे पूछो ना कैसी है साई माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ. सगरे निरे सदनी सगा मदमरे, सगरे रे सदरे सगा मरे, सगरे
Jai 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 ద్వాదశ గోత్రము సాయి బాబా.